Off the Ball Daily.
A home for your favourite podcasts from Off the Ball.
He still has that desire and appetite. He'll be back, you know. I mean, and he's a fit. You know, he looks after himself. He runs a lot. He looks after his body. So he'll be back again. He wants that eight desperately, I think, you know, inside. Even though he sort of talks it off a little bit. But I think he wants it desperately.
Subscribe to the Off The Ball Daily podcast feed right now.
The Sunday Paper Review on Off The Ball.
And you're welcome back to Off the Ball Sunday here on News Talk. John Duggan with you through to seven. Time now for the Sunday paper review between now and 3 o'clock. Just before we get to that, just to update you on what's happened in Scotland. Celtic have won full time, Hibernian won, Celtic 2 in Scotland. Ian Atcho with the winner, crucial victory for Martin O'Neill's side. Adrian Barry's off this week. I'm delighted to be joined by the sports editor of the Irish Daily Mail, Orla McElroy, and the football journalist, Paul O'Hare. Orla and Paul, good afternoon.
John, how are you?
I'm very good. Looking forward to the bank holiday Monday off. But before that, let's have some fun with talking through the supplements and the back pages. And I'm just going to put them up on the screen here. So we got the Sunday Times. Just enough for Leinster cling on to reach final, but we'll need to show more in Bilbao after their 29-25 win over Toulon. Changing fortunes, Connacht on the rise, but what now for Munster? And we also have Arsenal ease to victory to put pressure back on rivals. And still got it. Dublin show signs of dominance in sweeping aside Louth. Remember, you can watch us on our YouTube channel as well as listening on News Talk. We've got the back of the Irish Daily Mail. Jubilant Gunners go six clear of City. Arsenal too slick for Fulham. Beggan lands final place for Monaghan. That incredible finish at extra time over Derry. Monaghan into the Ulster final. Too close for comfort. Cullen hits out at media as Leinster squeak through to final. Picture there of Dan Sheehan. Got the back of the Sun on Sunday. Up, down. Dara leads town back to top flight. Dara O'Shea. Brilliant stuff, played every minute. What a season for him back in the Premier League with Ipswich. 3-0 win over QPR yesterday, and Isak out of crunch game with groin injury. So no Isak, according to the Sun, and obviously we know no Ekitike, no Salah. That probably puts Manchester United in the driving seat. Mixed guns, six shooters, Arsenal's win. Rock stars call the tune about the Dubs and Guinea's glory, and obviously Newmarket is ongoing. We have the back of the Sunday Independent, star power. Leinster sealed date with Destiny, and then Joe Brody's got an article about Mayo today. But Cullen calls for backing in Bilbao showdown. The quote from Leo Cullen, which I found interesting, Orla and Paul, I have to applaud the players for the desire throughout the season to want to put themselves back in this situation because, listen, you guys love throwing the boot into us, don't you? You guys love throwing the boot into us when things don't go well. Whatever sells, because you read plenty of us, you'd love if everyone got behind the team now. When you're up against juggernauts of the game, because it's not easy doing it, is it? We're the only Irish province left in the competition, but the group still will continue to do what we do. It's not always pretty, but we're up against some serious teams. It's an insanely hard to win this competition. So Leo Cullen's just a bit unhappy of the coverage of Leinster. They're in the ninth final now. They won the first four. They lost the next four. It is a record to be in the ninth final. Is his dissatisfaction with the way Leinster are covered justified?
Well, I mean, I would say not, but then I would say that, wouldn't I? I mean, I don't think so. I think
you're the enemy.
I'm the enemy. But, you know, my job is not working for Leinster Rugby. It's not working for the IRFU. My job is to edit what goes into the paper and discuss with rugby reporters as they see it, and they call it as they see it. That's been a sort of a bone of contention. I was talking to Hugh Farley about this last night, and he was saying that, like, he remembers getting a tongue lashing from Joe Schmidt for daring to reveal that Keane Healy was going to miss a game on a Wednesday. And Joe Schmidt couldn't understand why you would possibly publish that information and give an advantage to the opposition. They know a day ahead, they can prepare. And Hugh kind of went, that's my job. You have your job, but that's my job. So, you know, it's up to the media to report it as they see it. And he may feel that it's unfair, but I'd like to know exactly which point or which what it is he sees as unfair. Like, be specific and tell me where you have the problem. Like, as I said to Paul outside, this there's a sort of a vacuum created by the fact that Leinster and the IRFU, and it's not just rugby, it's in many other sports, they don't want to put players forward, they don't want to allow media access, they don't give people access. So if you're not inside the tent and you can't get one-on-one interviews with players that are going to be in any way revealing or and not revealing of tactics, revealing of them as people, then you're going to write about something else. So what are you going to write about? You have to take a view on the matches as you see them and call it as you see it.
Yeah,
exactly. Like you see that in the Premier League in England, that where maybe historically journalists might have had relationships with certain players over the years, going back, you know, a generation or so. That there's less and less of that now because of PR people and the way clubs kind of police, you know, media interviews in terms of it, everything's very softly sort of promoting this, promoting that. They're so used to doing their own in-house TV interviews now, be it in football, be it Gaelic Games as well, to a certain extent, and rugby. You know, there might be Leinster TV interviews, there might be Shamrock Rovers TV, FAI TV interviews, and it's all conducted by in-house people, so it's quite soft. You know, they're not going to ask probing questions. As Orla says, we're here to do a different job. So when they do get a bit of criticism, when they do get a few things thrown at them that perhaps they don't like, they sort of seem to rail against that. And you'd understand, you know, I'm not on the rugby beat as such. So, you know, I saw a few words saying angry Leo Cullen, you know.
Well, I suppose it's a bit of a surprise because Leo Cullen has always been very...
Exactly.
Very welcoming, very pleasant, very... even after very tough defeats in Champions Cup finals with front up. So that's why it is a bit unusual. It's not Alex Ferguson. It's not the form, as it were.
Yeah, but he's started to do it more and more, you know. And
maybe there's a siege mentality you're trying to create with the squad. Well, I mean, they've had four failures since 2018.
I was going to say, if you lost the game yesterday, you could understand maybe in a peak of frustration and whatever that you come out and you have a pop at whoever the people are sitting in front of you, interviewing you. But when you win a game, you know, and you still want to bring that up. It's clearly something that's been stored there. And I think there was talk during the week about there was, in-house Leinster sort of motivation used from the defeat to Northampton last year. And sort of some of the analysis around that game was kind of thrown out as I don't know if they were quite sort of pinning it to the dressing room wall type stuff, you know. But the fact that you still win a game and the coach, the head coach, wants to come out and have a pop, you know, that's clearly something that's not an accident. You know?
Yeah. It just feels like the only currency that matters for Leinster is winning this thing because it's become such an albatross now in their necks.
Yeah. And maybe he is trying to generate a sort of a narrative that they can get behind that, like, I remember that this kind of happened last year. There was a bit of nobody wants to see us win, everybody hates us and that kind of thing. And he's, you know, within his quotes, he also talked about how Leinster are up against juggernauts of the game and the European game in clubs like Toulon. But like, there are plenty of clubs out there throughout Europe who will argue that Leinster are a juggernaut. So maybe there is a little bit of creating a narrative, but I do like Leo Cullen coming out and having a go. Like, remember he did it with Simon Zebo and he was having a dig at Zebo in the aftermath coverage. Because of what he had said about them. So, you know, that's absolutely going to give us plenty to write about. So maybe it'll take the... Maybe we'll be talking about Leo Cullen and not Leinster's performance.
Exactly, and the fact that Toulon nearly stole it.
Yeah.
Yeah, 100%. Like, it's that classic semi-final thing of you win by whatever means necessary. Look, they look very comfortable coming into the latter stages of that game until things went awry. But look, they're in another final, and I'm all in favour of whatever the codes, be it players, be it coaches, coming out and having a pop at people. It shows a bit of personality, it shows a bit
of passion,
Absolutely, because as we touched on there, everything, there's an awful lot of sort of sanitised stuff presented.
Anodyne.
Yeah, packaged to you now, and lack of personality, and, you know, you can, any code, any sport, there's too much of that now. So to have a little bit of unscripted passion, even if it was maybe slightly premeditated by Cullen, to have a go, absolutely welcome.
I started off working as a nobody, and could probably still argue that I am, in the late 90s with Pat Dolan and Damien Richardson at the League of Ireland, and every week there'd be these box office press conferences and the Shelburne and Pats and everything. I thought it was fantastic.
It was brilliant stuff. And, like, you know, Dermot Keighley had a column in The Sun, Pat Dolan, Roddy Collins, you know, and, you know, they would just come out and say anything about each other just to drum up. And there was absolutely... They had to, you know, be behind the scenes, have been sort of plotting this, and I'll have a go at you over this, I'll have a go at you over that. Don't know for certain, but it was absolute box office stuff. It was brilliant, and they'd be tearing strips off each other in their columns on a weekly basis, and, you know, more of that, please.
No, I think on a much more serious level, the Munster issue, I mean, there's a few articles, Peter O'Reilly describing Munster as a problem child of Irish rugby in the Sunday Times, and then Rory Keane, Munster needs former boss to calm the chaos, a picture of Declan Kidney is back in Ireland, and that's his Just Saying column. I mean, to me, the decline of Munster rugby and what has happened to it is a crisis, because this is an iconic brand. This is a brand that I would have grown up like thinking is just as big a brand as the All Blacks or Kerry football or the Dubs or Manchester United or Liverpool. Like they beat the All Blacks in 1978. It took Ireland until 2016 to do it. You remember that amazing shot in Cardiff to O'Connell Street in Limerick in 2006 when they were going for that first European Cup and they won it. And the whole of the street just full of red. And the passion of the noughties and the winning those and the journeys to France and winning and then winning the two Holy Grails. And to see the decline in Munster rugby, it is just remarkable. I was just going through, I said this recently on another show here, like in the first decade of this millennium, 8 semi-finals and a couple of titles. In the next decade, 6, that was the last decade. In the 20s, no semi-finals reaching the Champions Cup, knocked out of the secondary competition, the European Challenge Cup this year. There's been, obviously, sadly, redundancies are coming down the track. There's been a controversial issue there recently as well. But just, I don't know if New Zealand rugby or Kerry football or Manchester United or Liverpool would accept such a decline. The people in their constituencies would accept this, what's happening to Munster.
With what you paint there, right, and if you look back to those glory days of Munster, what strikes you? The unity and the togetherness and the absolute, we're all one together driving forward. And look at it now, like there's infighting everywhere you go. There's issues with structures of the province. There's infighting between the Cork-Limerick divide. There is the issues in-house in terms of the way the Randall appointment, which they've backtracked on, was presented to the professional game board. And as a result of the way that was presented as a fait accompli, you have people stepping down. Rory Keane mentions that there have been other, you know, there's other people kind of stepping away from voluntary positions within the organisation. That does not, you know, smack of unity. And if everybody is not pulling in the same direction, you're not going to get that kind of success that you had in the glory days of, you know, the 2006-2008 wins.
Peter O'Reilly in the Sunday Times there has a nice, you know, two-page spread just on, it's kind of looking ahead to Connacht and Munster's game next weekend in the URC. And like, there isn't a great deal in terms of anything in any of the Sunday papers today that brings on the Munster, the Randall side of the Munster story in any great detail. But Peter has a nice two-page spread just kind of talking about how in terms of Leinster being the current modern-day standard bearers of the four provinces, of he's talking about how Connacht, you know, over the years would have maybe been playing sort of, you know, they'd have been further down the pecking order, Ulster too, but how they're bridging the gap in terms of becoming, you know, the closest sort of rivals as such to Leinster now, and how Munster, as you said at the top there, Munster have been, he finishes his piece by talking about Munster being the RFU's problem child, which, you know, for that phrase and alone conjures up so many other sort of memories in terms of the FEI and different things and John Delaney and what have you. So they might be sort of reasonably happy that somebody else is borrowing that phrase for the moment. But he just sets out a kind of a nice, under Stuart Lancaster, Connacht, of, you know, he's sort of a calming hand and steadying the ship in terms of the direction they're going. Ulster on the back of their own kind of European ventures this season too, and what exactly Munster just have left to sort of fight for in terms of the season that they're experiencing at the moment.
Aidan O'Connor has got a goal for Limerick, 1-7 to Clare's 4 points, 6 point lead for John Kiley's side into the 16th minute of their match in the Munster round robin. Burden star for Limerick. Kildare 5 points, Westmeath 3 in the Leinster Senior Football Championship semi final. Anything more to say in Munster? Should we move on to Liv?
Oh, yeah, there's plenty there, isn't there?
Liv Golf, Conor McKeown, another scorching article, hold the back page in the Sunday Independent. So farewell then, Liv.
We hardly knew you.
Yeah, one of the most sickening wastes of money. In this crazy world where there's so much suffering, a sickening waste of money. What Liv Golf has been, an utterly soulless enterprise that's going to have a hopefully quick death.
Absolutely, yeah. Like, I'll start this by saying golf, I have a decent passing interest in golf, but I'm not going to claim to know the kind of, to approach it with any great degree of knowledge outside of, you know, just enjoying the sort of the majors and what have you. But I do like good sports writing, and Conor, you know, I suppose would have been synonymous with sort of GA coverage over the years, but over the last while has been branching out and covering lots of different things and some fantastic pieces from the Masters, things like that. But just to read a small little passage of his piece, the Hold the Back Page column on the back page of the Sunday Indo Sports Supplement, he says, "Farewell then, Liv. You were a bigger waste of money than non-fungible tokens, e-voting machines and that exercise bike in your garden shed combined. No sporting entity spunked it quicker, in greater volumes or for nearly so little in return. Given a flamethrower, a petrol pump and a wheelbarrow of cash, an excitable pyromania couldn't burn it as quickly as Liv did trying to be golf's disruptor.
Connors just generates like so many lines that are so quotable, and so, you know, he is like, it's a great gain to general sports writing that he's kind of not just limited to the GAA beat now, and that he's, you know, that you get this column, because it's, you know, you turn to it every week and have a read of it. But like, it's his overall piece is like kind of, you know, it's, isn't it good that it's going? It came in to disrupt, did that, did nothing for the game. He goes on to talk about John Rahm at the end, and there's a bigger piece inside the Sunday Indo talking about John Rahm and how, I mean, John Rahm must be one of the biggest losers of this whole thing. And I mean that in a reputational sense, because obviously he, you know, was given wheelbarrow loads full of money to move to live. But the sort of idea that he was big enough that he would force the PGA Tour into a deal. And this idea now that he won't pay his fines, that he won't take the way back that other people have been offered, that he didn't jump ship when Brooks Koepka did, and he could have done, and there was clear signs then that things were not going well with Liv. And even now, when it's clear that the Saudis are pulling their support, he's still standing back and saying, yeah, no, ye come to me with the deal, rather than just paying. It's a 3 million in fines, which is a pittance compared to what he's earned.
300 million reported what he received to go to Liv. I mean, how much money is enough? Because surely he had enough money already. There is the heritage of the game. Liv was a disruptor that has failed. It has damaged golf, and it's also so disconnected from the people that watch the game and think that this is just so much, so greedy, so avaricious from these golfers just taking so much more money to disrupt the game.
And hasn't done anything for their game, John. Like,
no.
You know, Look at how John Rahm played in Augusta, right? Stanked the joint out and then goes back to Liv and wins like a week later or something. Like, does that tell you something about the standard of golf that is being played on the Liv Tour?
Yes.
You know,
which is why Patrick Reed and Brooks Koepka came back, and Reed did play well at Augusta, and Tyrrell Hatton has been playing on the DP World Tour and did play well at Augusta. But
and even Rahm just talking about, you know, taking people for fools from the outset, and others who jump ship talking about why, you know, what appealed to them most about going to this, you know, Liv Golf was the innovation of it all, you know.
Grow the game.
Yeah,
the famous phrase,
the game, and, you know.
But the innovation was this idea that it was going to be 54 holes, which was the entire name of it.
Yeah.
And now they've gone to 72 just to try and get world ranking points.
Dermot Burns has got a penalty for Limerick, has gone in 2-8 to 6 points. They lead Clare. So Limerick really dominant early on in Ennis in that Munster senior hurling Rab Rahm game. It just kind of, it ties in with a piece that was done in the Telegraph, repurposed in the Sunday Independent by Tom Morgan, on a World Cup for wealthy event junkies. Just the, Peter Moore has a lot of credibility. Like, he's a former Liverpool CEO. I'm quoting here. He's a vice president with Reebok at USA 94. Warns it could get even more hostile for FIFA. And Moore, who founded Santa Barbara Sky in 2022, apportions blame to Gianni Infantino, the FIFA boss, for failing to challenge the Americans when pricing agreements were made. I quote, FIFA, and in particular Infantino, decided many years ago to take advantage of a maybe unique situation here as to how tickets are sold and what prices they're sold at and the legality of the secondary market. He says FIFA should be taking more responsibility for anger, given it is profiting from an official secondary market website. Not only are they turning a blind eye to it, they're actually participating in what I believe is gouging, is the opportunistic element of the unique market. I live here, I'm used to it, I play the game as well. But from the perspective of applying this to the World Cup with global, you know, fans come over here who are not used to this and certainly don't have the financial wherewithal to be paying thousands of dollars for a ticket. And later in the piece, the 72-year-old says he's very concerned and saddened by the contrast with the great USA 94 and talks about his kind of being depressed about it, to be honest. I quote, it was very much make the tickets affordable, let's bring people in. Part of the bid process was we will build a professional league here in America, which they did with the MLS. We built on that over the decades. I'm personally frustrated. I'm annoyed that Infantino's KPI, if you will, is the 11 billion income rather than people just having a great time. So Infantino might claim that I'm going to put all this 11 million back into the game. It's a non-profit. We'll, in the 211 countries, foster football where it would never be played. But this has been done at the expense of actually the most beautiful celebration of life now being an exclusion point for ordinary people to watch football matches.
Yeah, like there's, you know, in that piece, it's a Daily Telegraph piece, so it's they're obviously talking primarily to English readers, but they quote some prices here. So if you're an English football fan and you want to go to the World Cup to follow England from their first match, if they were to make it to the final, The cheapest ticket outlay that you would spend on those is €6,000. But if you wanted category one tickets, it goes up to nearly €14,500 just to take in the games. And that's outside of your daily food, your beer costs. They also highlight something that was reported by The Athletic a while ago about just even how they're, you know, in terms of just general price gouging going on, that it's now going to cost, if you're at New York Penn Station to MetLife Stadium in New Jersey, a train ticket will cost you $100 just to get out to the game.
It's a tenfold increase.
Exactly, yeah.
Nobody shouting stop about the obscenity of money in sport.
Yeah.
It just seems like it's, well, you just have to just suck it up.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's like everything is gauged now by how much money it generates. Well, this World Cup will be better because it's going to generate three times as much as the World Cup in Qatar did. Like, that's not the performance indicator. That, as he says, the KPI is not the income.